fue un error, pero se negó a pedir disculpas.
On Saturday morning, our forces provided close air support to Afghan forces at their request. To be clear, the decision to provide aerial fires was a U.S. decision made.
El general John Campbell, comandante de las tropas estadounidenses en Afganistán, dijo que la decisión de bombardear el hospital el sábado fue tomada por el mando militar norteamericano después de que las fuerzas afganas solicitaran el ataque.
A hospital was mistakenly struck. We would never intentionally target a protected medical facility.
Durante su comparecencia del Comité de Armas del Senado, el general aseguró que el bombardeo contra el centro médico fue un error.
I must allow the investigation to take its course, and therefore I'm not at liberty to discuss further specifics at this time.
Campbell prometió que Estados Unidos llevará a cabo una investigación exhaustiva sobre el incidente.
Does the president plan to apologize to Doctors Without Borders or to the families of victims?
Cuestionado por un reportero sobre si el presidente Barack Obama pedirá disculpas a las víctimas del bombardeo, el vocero de la Casa Blanca, Josh Earnest, dijo que antes deberán realizarse investigaciones sobre lo que realmente ocurrió el 3 de octubre.
There still is more that needs to be learned, however, about how exactly this happened.
Médicos Sin Fronteras ha acusado a Estados Unidos de cometer crímenes de guerra y exige una investigación independiente. Inicialmente, el Pentágono había asegurado que bombardeó el hospital localizado en la ciudad afgana de Kunduz porque sus fuerzas fueron atacadas desde allí. Después señaló que en realidad había respondido a una petición de las fuerzas afganas. Médicos Sin Fronteras afirma que Estados Unidos tenía las coordenadas de su hospital y que al inicio del bombardeo se comunicaron con ellos, pero el ataque aéreo continuó por más de una hora. La Fiscalía de Colombia exigió el martes a la Corte Suprema de Justicia abrir una investigación contra el expresidente y actual senador Álvaro Uribe por su presunta participación en la masacre de Laro en 1997, cuando era gobernador en Antioquia. Jairo Gómez informa.
Luego de valorar los testimonios de exparamilitares hoy extraditados a los Estados Unidos, en los que relacionan directamente al expresidente Uribe con los hechos cuando fungía como gobernador, el fiscal Eduardo Montealegre envió copias a la Corte Suprema de Justicia para que abra investigación formal contra el senador del Centro Democrático.
En el día de hoy, la Fiscalía General de la Nación compulsó copias contra el exgobernador de Antioquia, Álvaro Uribe Vélez, para que se investigue su probable participación por acción o por omisión en los casos de la llamada masacre de Laro en el municipio de Ituango, en Antioquia.
Gloria Cuartas, quien en la época de los hechos era alcaldesa de Apartadó, municipio ubicado en el departamento de Antioquia, recordó cómo en el momento de la masacre el proyecto paramilitar bajo la gobernación de Uribe prácticamente copó toda la geografía del departamento.
Uribe es responsable de las prácticas de muerte en la región del Urabá y en Antioquia.
Según Alexander López, vicepresidente del Senado, el exmandatario debe responderle a la justicia y asegura que como cualquier colombiano lo esperan en los estados judiciales, porque en la época en que ocurrieron los hechos no estaba protegido por ningún fuero especial.
Nos parece muy importante que esto se dé porque hay demasiados testimonios y demasiadas versiones que comprometen de manera grave al expresidente Uribe, y ese fuero constitucional que ha tenido expresidente, pues aspiramos que la justicia llegue, indague y logre hallar las pruebas suficientes, y si es del caso, las responsabilidades que el expresidente Uribe tenga que asumir.
Tras conocerse la decisión de la Fiscalía colombiana, el hoy senador y expresidente Álvaro Uribe calificó de estrategia electoral la decisión del ente acusador para afectar a su partido en las elecciones del próximo 5 de octubre. Jairo Gómez, Telesur, Bogotá, Colombia.
La red de comunicadores Boca de Polen nos habla de la lucha del pueblo yaqui por proteger el agua que abastece a sus comunidades. Habla el recién liberado vocero del pueblo yaqui, Mario Luna, quien pasó más de un año preso injustamente. Luna, quien considera su liberación se logró gracias a la presión social, denunció ante el alto comisionado de la ONU para los Derechos Humanos que otros defensores de bosques y agua en el territorio mexicano están siendo encarcelados.
Bajo la sombra en el Centro de Readaptación Social número 2 de Hermosillo, Sonora, salió en libertad el vocero de la tribu yaqui, Mario Luna. Tanto su parte defensora como sociedad civil y la comunidad yaqui se movilizaron durante ese tiempo para demostrar su inocencia, ya que fue acusado por cargos de secuestro y robo. Sin embargo, se atribuye la detención de Mario Luna a la defensa de su comunidad sobre el megaproyecto llamado Acueducto Independencia. Este megaproyecto plantea llevar agua del río Yaqui a la ciudad de Hermosillo. La comunidad indígena Yaqui ha recurrido a diversas instancias legales, inclusive el día de hoy. Existe una orden judicial expedida por parte de la Suprema Corte de Justicia de la Nación que ordena la suspensión de la obra en cualquier etapa que ésta se encuentre. Aquí unas breves palabras del vocero de la tribu Yaqui a días de su liberación.
Me siento muy fortalecido sabiendo pues que la justicia siempre estuvo de mi lado y obviamente sabiendo también que este sacrificio de un año, 11 días que pasé en esas condiciones en la cárcel, pues obviamente sirven como ejemplo y sirven como la cuota, ¿verdad?, que yo aporto de sacrificio para que mi pueblo, mi territorio siga existiendo como milenariamente lo ha hecho a pesar de todo. También la certeza de que hemos actuado conforme lo más a nuestra ley tradicional, conforme nuestro juramento yaqui obliga a cada miembro de la tropa a dar el sacrificio, ¿verdad?, hasta lo último que se pueda. La denuncia pues se oyó clara. Salí siendo una persona con más carácter, con más firmeza y obviamente con la identidad yaqui bien reafirmada, ¿no?
A pesar de la evidente alegría que siente la tribu yaqui por ver a su compañero de lucha en libertad, Mario Luna advirtió que esta disputa aún sigue latente, pues denuncia que las autoridades siguen siendo omisas a pesar de todos los recursos legales que se han interpuesto ante la construcción del acueducto, ya que las autoridades en la materia, Semarnat y Conagua, han hecho creer a la opinión pública que la construcción del acueducto Independencia ya es un hecho. Aseguró que toca el turno de la nueva administración, de la gobernadora priista Claudia Pavlovich, de cumplir ahora sí con la búsqueda de otras opciones de abastecimiento.
No es una lucha perdida, estamos muy próximos a lograr lo que queremos, ¿no? La gobernadora Claudia Pavlovich, que es la que Guillermo Padre Celida, ha manifestado que buscará otras opciones de abastecimiento de agua para la ciudad de Hermosillo que no generen tanta división como la que se generó. Entonces, es una declaración muy general, sin embargo, pues da una idea de que se está analizando.
Reportó Geraldina Lázaro, de la red de comunicadores Boca de Polen.
Nos vamos a América del Sur, donde Argentina hizo el pago de bonos de deuda más grande en su historia. Informan los compañeros del Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias, Farco.
Argentina pagó 5.900 millones de dólares a acreedores privados con reservas del Banco Central. Fue para cumplir con el vencimiento de los bonos Bodén 2015 que se habían emitido en el año 2005. La presidenta Cristina Fernández dijo por la cadena nacional que Argentina cerró con esto el último capítulo de su gran endeudamiento. Además remarcó que en 2003 la deuda externa en moneda extranjera era del 75% del Producto Bruto Interno y que hoy es del 7,3%. La presidenta destacó también que el pago se hizo sin tener que pedir préstamos al exterior y que los próximos gobiernos deberán pagar menos que este.
En estos 12 años hemos pagado entre deuda a tenedores de títulos privados y organismos multilaterales de créditos 145 mil millones de dólares sin acceder a financiamiento externo. Con trabajo y esfuerzo de todos los argentinos, los tres próximos gobiernos, los próximos tres periodos de gobierno tendrán endeudamiento por 80.000, que pagar 80.000 millones de dólares, mucho menos, casi la mitad de lo que nosotros hemos pagado.
Con este pago hecho ayer a los tenedores de los bonos Bodén 2015, las reservas del Banco Central cayeron a 27.713 millones de dólares. Por eso, para hoy está previsto el lanzamiento de un nuevo bono con vencimiento en el 2020 para intentar que esos bonistas reinviertan lo recibido con el pago de ayer. Mientras tanto, también se conoció que la Corte de Apelación de Nueva York dictó otro fallo contra las pretensiones del juez Tomás Griesa. El tribunal esta vez rechazó que los fondos buitres puedan quedarse con dinero que el país les depositó a los acreedores que adhirieron a los canjes de deuda en el Banco de Nueva York Mellon.
Los Ángeles centroamericanos conmemoraron el 223 aniversario del nacimiento de José Francisco Morazán Quesada, nacido en el actual Honduras y presidente de la República Federal de Centroamérica. Vicente Vigil es un ciudadano hondureño residente en esta ciudad.
Queremos honrar a Francisco Morazán, que fue el paladín centroamericano que luchó por la unión centroamericana. Y nosotros pues quedamos divididos, El Salvador y Guatemala, pero queremos y nosotros siempre ser un poco unionistas. No que es difícil, pero vamos a ir siguiendo las luchas de Francisco Morazán, la unión y la libertad, más que todo la libertad.
Morazán hoy día es una figura que simboliza el espíritu unitario centroamericano, el mismo que en 1824 se convirtiera en el primer jefe de Estado de Honduras. Su liderazgo en el siglo XIX hizo posible primero la liberación de Honduras, luego de El Salvador y después de Guatemala. La patria centroamericana después incorporaría a Nicaragua y Costa Rica. José Bautista, del grupo Hondureños Indignados de Los Ángeles.
Creo que todo el centroamericano que quiere prosperidad para sus pueblos, el buen centroamericano que busca la unión, el buen centroamericano que emigró para mejorar nuestros países, ahí no ha muerto Morazán. Él vive en cada pensamiento, en cada ideal de cada uno de nosotros, ya sea de incluso de México, del país que sea. La unión para los pueblos, la igualdad para los pueblos, independientemente del país que venga.
Como presidente de Centroamérica estableció en la región el libre comercio, modificó la ley de exportaciones, fomentó el proteccionismo en la industria textil, llamó a la libertad de culto, impulsó políticas por la educación de todos los ciudadanos e implementó un nuevo sistema penitenciario. Rick Sánchez, un manifestante.
Morazán siempre queriendo unir, siempre queriendo ser parte, unir todas las partes, viaja a Costa Rica y en un engaño del gobierno costarricense es como es puesto preso y al mismo tiempo es llevado al padrón de fusilamiento.
Él quería la unidad de los pueblos. El ideal de él era que Centroamérica fuera un país, que no estuviéramos divididos. Por ese ideal y por ese pensamiento siempre hay traicioneros, siempre hay personas que buscan dividir y por ese acto fue que a Morazán, la misma gente que no quería ver la unión, la prosperidad de los pueblos, hicieron que lo fusilaran.
El 15 de septiembre de 1842, Francisco Morazán fue fusilado por el gobierno derechista de Costa Rica. Hoy día, varias calles, parques, escuelas y empresas, igual que provincias en Honduras y El Salvador, llevan el nombre del también conocido como el Simón Bolívar centroamericano, Francisco Morazán. En tanto, Washington amplía su presencia militar en la región centroamericana en un intento de obstaculizar el avance de la construcción del Canal de Nicaragua y minimizar el rápido crecimiento de las naciones del ALBA y Petrocaribe promovidas por Venezuela. Analistas señalan que China tendrá pronto una enorme influencia económica en Centroamérica y el Caribe. De ahí la prisa de los Estados Unidos por tener gobiernos obedientes centroamericanos, un último intento de preservar el mundo unipolar que controlará después del fin de la Guerra Fría. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
I'm going to tell you a number of things, but you really only have to remember two words.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
Los ministros de comercio de 12 países finalizaron las negociaciones del mayor acuerdo comercial del mundo. Se trata del Acuerdo de Asociación Transpacífica, ATP por sus siglas en español, o por sus siglas en inglés, conocido como TPP, negociado por años en secreto. Ahora los congresos de los 12 países deberán ratificarlo o rechazarlo. El presidente Barack Obama declaró de inmediato que Estados Unidos no dejará que países como China escriban las reglas de la economía global. Mientras en México, el presidente Enrique Peña Nieto aseguró que el acuerdo de asociación transpacífica se traducirá en mayores oportunidades de inversión y trabajos bien remunerados para los mexicanos. Organizaciones sociales en Perú se pronunciaron el martes en contra del acuerdo transpacífico, al que consideran afectará negativamente principalmente a los pobres. El corresponsal de Telesur en Perú, Jaime Herrera, explica el temor del personal médico sobre la prohibición por varios años de fabricar medicamentos genéricos más baratos para controlar enfermedades como el cáncer.
Organizaciones de pacientes dicen que los sectores más pobres, los sectores más necesitados en el momento de tener que costear el tratamiento de una enfermedad van a tener problemas, porque el tema de patentes se ha dado por 5 años para aquellos productos de origen químico, pero además para aquellos productos de origen biológico, los cuales hasta el momento no tenían ningún tipo de patente, también se suman a esta prácticamente condición de que solamente tenga el monopolio alguna empresa que hace justamente esta patente. Los principales medicamentos que son de este origen son aquellos para el tratamiento, por ejemplo, de cáncer para la mama. Hay bastantes mujeres en Perú, esta cifra de mujeres con cáncer de mama y de muertes, además, por este mal, está aumentando de manera drástica aquí en Perú. Y ahora, tener acceso a esos medicamentos va a ser aún más difícil, porque ya se ha conocido de algunos medicamentos que tenían justamente patentes, por ejemplo, de la compañía Bristol, que llegaron a costar aquí en Perú 20 veces más que en otros países de América Latina. Pero también hay otros sectores que reclaman, sectores de producción agropecuaria, que dicen que ya Perú ha bajado algunos aranceles, así como también ha reducido una franja de costos, permitiendo que productos que son subsidiados en otros países ingresen y que compitan de manera desleal con los productos peruanos.
El profesor de Estudios Latinoamericanos en el Colegio de Pomona, en California, Miguel Tinker Salas, opina sobre el acuerdo de asociación transpacífica, el TPP.
En gran parte consumado, porque ya hubo un acuerdo entre las partes que negociaron o que realmente se le impuso el TPP. O sea, todavía faltan que los países que aprobaron, los que sus representantes aprobaron, lleguen al Congreso y lo aprueben. En el caso de Estados Unidos, siendo año electoral, se podría complicar un poco el panorama. Pero ese Tratado de Libre Comercio en realidad es una continuación de lo que fue el TLC, el Tratado de Libre Comercio en Norteamérica, y es parte del proyecto tanto económico como político por parte de Estados Unidos. Político en el sentido de rodear a China y tratar de aislar a China, y económico en el sentido de darle grandes ventajas a las multinacionales, incluso las farmacéuticas, a las inversionistas, a las mineras, para abrir todos los espacios en América Latina y en Asia también, y a la vez asegurar que Estados Unidos tenga garantía de estos mercados, y realmente sacrifica los derechos ambientales, los derechos laborales, los derechos nacionales, lo sacrifica en el altar del libre comercio.
¿Alguna persona cínica pudiera decir de que cada pueblo tiene el gobierno que se merece? ¿Hasta qué punto eso es un comentario justo para los pueblos?
Yo creo que es un comentario que realmente no toma en consideración las condiciones sociales y económicas. Bien sabemos que, por ejemplo, en el caso de México, el gobierno de México logra reelegirse manipulando la pobreza. Cada año hay 1 millón de personas más pobres y cada año hay un nivel más de desesperación y de capacidad de manipular estos sectores que carecen de educación, que carecen de trabajo, de fuentes de empleos, que son parte del sector informal, que se encuentran al margen del aparato social y político, y manipular sus votos para lograr reelegirse. Y eso lo vemos constantemente en elección tras elección, y no solo en México, pero en países, digamos, en Sudamérica también y en Centroamérica. Y eso es lo más lamentable, porque el decir que simplemente el pueblo merece lo que recibe no toma en consideración las condiciones objetivas que esos pueblos enfrentan y el balance de fuerza que existe en esa realidad.
Representantes de algunos gobiernos progresistas de América Latina hablan de que las decisiones colectivas se hagan basándose en la verdad, en el terreno, pero también hay muchísimos políticos que le mienten a los pueblos cuando andan haciendo sus campañas proselitistas y no hay
derecho de los pueblos a remover a los presidentes después por mentirosos, ¿es algo que pudiera remediarse?
Bueno, yo creo que remediarse requiere un cambio constitucional. Eso lo vimos en Venezuela, en Ecuador y en Bolivia, donde los de la población en realidad desarrolló nuevas propuestas constitucionales, se le otorgó derechos al medio ambiente, se le otorgó derechos a la madre tierra, se otorgó derechos fundamentales del agua, educación, bienestar, empleo a la población y se les dio capacidad para poder revocar gobiernos, algo que en los países llamados modernos no se hace, lo cual lleva de nuevo a entender que tenemos dos o tres diferentes realidades en América Latina. Se nos vende la idea de que el Tratado de Libre Comercio nos traerá progreso, pero ya tenemos más de 100 años con ese proyecto. Vimos que el Tratado de Libre Comercio en Norteamérica iba a traer el progreso a México, iba a traer la modernidad, no la trajo, más bien estancó a la economía, la abrió, destruyó sectores tradicionales y obreros, e incluso obligó a la exportación a la de más de 12 millones de personas que tuvieron que albergarse en Estados Unidos para lograr lo más básico. O sea que estamos viendo que los Tratados de Libre Comercio simplemente benefician a sectores muy particulares, a sectores élites, a las multinacionales y sus aliados en estos países.
En Estados Unidos el tratado, igual que México y Canadá, pues el NAFTA se aprobó sin consultar con los pueblos. Hoy por hoy se está hablando de que el TPP, el texto del TPP, podría ser presentado ante el Congreso a final de año, alrededor de Navidad, cuando los congresistas están de vacaciones y cuando la gente está muy ocupada tratando de, en este momento de crisis, de encontrar un par de dólares para comprarle regalos de Navidad a los niños, y poca gente estaría dispuesta a invertir un poco de tiempo en pelear la causa del TPP. ¿Piensa que hay una solución, algo que pudiera cambiar, algo inesperado?
Hay que crecer un movimiento en contra de la manipulación de los electores y de la población. Como usted menciona, el traer este Tratado de Libre Comercio durante Navidad, durante el 10 de diciembre, sería una burla a la población, no solamente de Estados Unidos, de los demás países de la región, muy bien sabiendo que ningún congresista ni leyó el TLC anterior o el NAFTA anterior y va a tener tiempo de leer esta. Siempre lo aprueban en base a los intereses económicos, y eso es lo fundamental de entender. Casi la mayoría de esa gente ni leyó el acto del Patriota, ni el Patriot Act, ni leyó la ley de inmigración, ni leyó, lo dejó a que sus empleados lo leyeran y le dieran el visto bueno, o que los grupos de cabildeo le aseguraran que por apoyar ese tratado recibirían fondos a sus campañas. Eso es lo que es lamentable de lo que se llama la democracia en Estados Unidos o lo que se llama la democracia en los países desarrollados. No es participativa, es representativa. ¿Y a quién representa? A los sectores económicos pudentes, a los más fuertes, y deja al margen a la mayoría de la población.
Finalmente, se está hablando de que México y otro de los 12 países ha prometido esperarse 4 años después de haberse ratificado el TPP para explicarle, para mostrarle el texto completo a su población, o si no se aprueba, 4 años después de que se hayan cerrado las negociaciones. ¿Usted ha tenido oportunidad de comprobar que eso es cierto y no solo un rumor sobre México?
Hasta el momento no lo he visto. He visto solamente que la secretaria de Relaciones Exteriores, Luis Maceo, se estaba felicitando de que México aprobó. Hay que recordar que México ha aprobado más tratados de libre comercio que cualquier otro país en el mundo y todavía no logra la supuesta modernidad. Todavía sigue aumentando de 2 millones de personas en pobreza cada año. Eso es lo lamentable. El modelo está equivocado, el modelo ha fallado. Tiene desde Salinas a Peña Nieto, se ha firmado más tratados de libre comercio y el país sigue estancado, la economía sigue en descenso, el número de multimillonarios sigue creciendo, pero la pobreza, que realmente afecta a la mayoría de mexicanos y mexicanas, sigue todavía afectando al país.
Era Miguel Tinker Salas, profesor de Estudios Latinoamericanos en el Colegio de Pomona, en California. En Costa Rica realizan una feria para educar y concientizar a la población sobre temas como economía solidaria, cooperativismo, trueques y otras formas de intercambio de bienes y servicios fuera de la estructura formal del capitalismo.
usan el trueque, le dan vida a las cosas, se relacionan entre ellos más allá de la ley del valor impuesto por el capitalismo y su sistema monetario. Ana Yancy es facilitadora de las mesas de trueque.
Se nos educa pensando que todo tiene un precio, que todo se compra, que todo se vende, y no necesariamente, digamos, uno puede hacer cosas mediante el intercambio.
Ella es parte de la Peña Cultural Ramonense y junto a otros colectivos como Guanared y Ecoartes, realizan giras en todo el país para difundir otra economía.
Eso es como reapropiarnos de que la economía también tiene que ver con nuestra administración personal, colectiva y de los recursos de los territorios. Entonces hemos venido como sembrando esa semilla en las comunidades.
Exponen formas de desligarse de la economía de mercado y democratizarlo en función de las comunidades.
Y sí esperamos incentivar estas experiencias de recuperación de que esa economía parte de la vida, ¿verdad? Economía significa administración de la casa, pero parece como que la administración está en manos de gente muy lejana que no siempre toma en cuenta las necesidades de las comunidades.
La economía social solidaria se abre así paso entre la población costarricense, buscando otra forma de relacionarse y producir.
Democracia, rescate de tradiciones culturales, relaciones con el ambiente, conservación, prácticas organizativas democráticas. También para nosotros es muy importante el tema de la soberanía alimentaria. O sea, para nosotros es economía solidaria, tenemos ese tipo de enfoque.
Aunque existe amplia tradición cooperativa en el país, estas grandes empresas no responden ya a sus valores originales y funcionan dentro del capitalismo sin cuestionarlo.
La economía social y estas grandes cooperativas, aunque han jugado un papel importante en el país, porque sí lo han hecho, han logrado en algunos territorios democratizar la economía, nosotros particularmente creemos que se han alejado mucho de los valores y principios que originalmente las constituyeron, ¿verdad?
Como Ana Yancy, muchas personas buscan formas alternativas de pensar y vivir la economía, ya sea por necesidad o por convicción. Fernando Francia, Telesur, Costa Rica.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica, un noticiero producido diariamente con el trabajo voluntario y digno de sus colaboradores. A nombre de Toshli, del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Free Radio Santa Cruz is losing its studio location, and so we reach out to you with $500 in hand. A reward for 1 year location. We can pay some rent. We do need a bathroom facility, some small square footage, electricity. Contact us if you know a location that can help. FRSC@freakradio.org.
Extremely good job. He has been self-educated by being there. I know that he has an excessive amount of time to concentrate on these things, and I know he has a brilliant mind. And by such, if this is lost, it's going to be a loss to the community. It'll be a loss to humanity, really, because I supported him in what he was doing and while he is incarcerated there, and within everything. And I have been supportive of him from day one until the present time, and I will continue to be supportive of him because the things that he are doing are beneficial for humanity.
Let's go back to Austin to speak with Kenneth Foster's daughter, Nidesha. She's 11 years old, about the same amount of time that Kenneth Foster has been on death row. Nidesha, you've grown up visiting your dad in prison?
Yes, I was about 1 year old when the incident had taken place, and ever since he has been put into death row sentence, he's been watching me grow up from behind glass, and I've seen him watch me get older from behind glass, and it's a hard thing for me to do, but I get used to it, but it's not a happy thing for me to do.
Have you ever touched your dad?
When I was 1 year old, before the incident happened, I have not touched my dad since probably 96.
And when you speak with him, what are some of the things he tells you in terms of continuing to have hope that he will be able to be saved?
Yes, he encouraged me. That's what keeps me strong about his case, because, you know, if I didn't have him to encourage me, I would probably not be able to do anything, because I'd be so sad and stressed out. But it's the matter of things that he does, and, you know, how he listens to me, even when people don't look or listen to us. It's, you know, everybody, he calls me his little princess, and I mean, I feel like I am his princess because of the things he does for me. And even though he's a father behind glass, he does a lot of stuff for me. You know, he still is a father. And people need to recognize that when somebody's a big part of your heart, like my father is, I mean, my father's more than half of my heart. I mean, I love him so much. And if the state of Texas kills him just for driving a car, it's like you're killing my heart. It's like killing half of me. It's like if you execute him, you might as well execute me, because of the type of things and the could have, should have known stuff. And it's just how the Texas law parties, they just really need to take the time to listen. And my dad probably would not be in the predicament that he is in if law parties would take the time to listen to us.
Nidesha, what do you tell kids at school? What do you tell your friends?
Well, I like to keep my father is on death row in jail private. I've told my best friends, but nobody out of that. But I'm not ashamed of it at all. I'm really not. But, you know, when people say, you know, your dad, I say, I don't have a dad. Or if they ask me what happened, I would tell them. But I didn't really, like, take it out to the public. But there's been a couple of times at school where I've been hurt because they talked about dads and different things. But I think that I managed to keep myself together because, you know, me and my father, we write back and forth. And, you know, we're constantly talking to each other, even though, and, you know, we're not going to let Texas separate us because we love each other so much. I mean, I don't think there's a relationship this big as me and my father's. We just, you know, we adore each other and we love each other so much. And I just think that if we fight for his life, that I don't think that Texas should take away my father's life. I think that the governor...
Go ahead.
I was going to say that I think that the governor and the Texas law parties need to really, you know, take some time to look over his case and see that he is an innocent man.
We're going to talk about what that kind of appeal involves. We're talking to Nidesha Foster, Kenneth Foster's 11-year-old daughter, grew up with her father on death row, Lawrence Foster, Kenneth Foster's grandfather. When we come back from break, Tasha Foster, Kenneth Foster's wife, and we'll hear Kenneth Foster's own words about being put to death. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We'll be back in a minute.
I'd like to ask Lawrence Foster, grandfather of Kenneth Foster. You're 80 years old. You've lived most of your life, I think, in Texas. You've seen all of these executions occurring in your state and the state become an international pariah in terms of the death penalty. So many of them African-Americans disproportionately. Your thoughts about the death penalty in Texas and what it's done to your state, the citizens of your state?
First of all, I have never been in favor of the death penalty. This is something that man has established, and by such, I just do not approve of it. Seeing all of the deaths that have occurred through execution, even though it was not me nor my immediate family and any of them, I felt saddened because of such. And to know that we are a civilized state, a civilized nation, and that we are literally we are literally killing people. In fact, I would almost say it's murder, because we know that it's going to happen and it is premeditated. And is this killing, murder, or what? And we often have a tendency to ridicule other nations about how they treat their citizen. Maybe we should take a look at ourselves and try to correct some of the things that we are doing, rather than trying to and really be a lead in the world, be leaders in the world, not just something that will degrade America or degrade Texas.
You see, Texas is part of America. And when something happens here, Europe, Asia, various other countries say that is the United States. And they have a tendency to label the United States because of one little particular area. And I think that we should be a little more cognizant of what we are doing here. I say we, the state itself. I mean, I'm not going to ridicule the state to any extent, but there are so many things, there are certain things that should be corrected.
That was Lawrence and Nidesha Foster, grandfather and daughter of Kenneth Foster, on the August 9th edition of Democracy Now! Kenneth Foster is scheduled to be executed on August 30th by the state of Texas. You can follow his case online at www.freekenneth.com. That's spelled www.freekenneth.com. Supporters have put contact information on the site for listeners to use to ask Texas Governor Rick Perry to spare Foster's life.
Provided his RV for us to use it during the night between after 11 o'clock when the parking garage.
Give me a break. Look at all these people that have had to resign from.
Well, Madison, I saw you. Madison, I saw you down at the protest. On Sunday. What was your feeling about the protest?
I thought that the Federal Bureau of Investigation employees were outnumbering the homeless.
You say the G-men outnumbered
the
homeless?
I didn't like all the undercovers watching everyone.
Madison, I think you've been drinking too much of the
No, I haven't. I started taking pictures and everyone gets pissed off. Well,
I expect
why.
A full document of all the photos. I want the file, Madison.
Robert, you guys just need to wake up. You don't understand how
no,
much
I want to see
Robert.
Evidence, Madison. Otherwise, I will not jump into your paranoid world. But I do
you're
thank
allowing,
you.
You're allowing
I thank you for calling, though.
With your attitude, Robert.
I'm
sure. It's actually kind of like a denim shirt and khaki pants. And that's what I'll be wearing when I come down there.
Sounds great.
Yeah, and I live, Kinko's just a couple minutes away from my house. So I'm sure I'll get there, probably before you. And, yeah, I'll just pull in the parking spot, and I'm sure I'll see you walk up. I'm sure I'll see a woman kind of walking up and looking around. I'm sure you'll see me. I'll be sitting right there in the handicap spot.
Well, that's great, Andrea.
And, yeah, and if that's a help, I'm willing to do at least that. I can at least do that right now.
If you want to talk more at some point about your own experiences, bad and good, or sounds like bad, with the First Alarm, please, get back to us on that.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'll see you down there at Kinko's at 9:30, Amanda.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye. Right,
thank you. Phone line's open, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and we are on the Internet at freakradio.org. If you want to be a part of Free Radio, say maybe a broadcaster, that's a possibility. You just have to pass the collective scrutiny, which isn't really that scrutinizing. If you have a program that you think would be of interest to the community, you should give a call to 427-4523. That's our message line, which also you can do if you got donations to give us, or maybe a public service announcement you want to make, or criticism about some fucking obscenities on the air that you find annoying, that all that kind of stuff. Anything you want to say, call the voicemail, 427-4523. If you really want to be a broadcaster, you should go to the website. That's actually a quicker way because you can download an application form, and that is at www.freakradio.org. And so that's where we are. That's who we are. And if you want to call in now and chat with us, 427-3772 is the number to call. In the studio with me, Amanda and John Barnett, who are two of the daytime crew of what, 5 or 10 or 15 people. The evening.
It's growing, actually. It started out with just 5 of us. Now there's 7 of us who are actually there day in, day out. There's always one of the 7 there. And we're seeing more and more supporters every day. We've got a couple who live in an RV who pulled up just so that we'd have a bathroom at night so we could cook some food, make coffee in the morning, when usually they're out staring at a serene beach, beach windowscape for themselves. They decided to give up their time and their money because they're putting their own money in their gas tank. They're putting their own money in the generator for the computers. They're putting their own money into the coffee and things like that. And so, it's growing every day, and we want more people. We want as many heads standing in the face of the mayor and of the city council members and of the city manager as we can get. But we want people who believe in what we're saying.
Well, perhaps we have a believer calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, Madison, long time no here.
I know that. You know that place down by the clock with the shadows painted on the wall?
I'm not sure.
It has the 1969 brick there.
I know where it's
at.
A
little tiny park.
John knows where it's at.
That is where the first all-night vigil was held in Santa Cruz for many, 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 many months. There were people saying we're not going to leave this piece of land until the war is over, so things can change from all-night vigils. You just have to stick with it.
We're hoping.
And also, the planner suddenly resigned in Scotts Valley, which is one of their favorite places to launder planning. Kind of like we have all new bunch of new people in planning in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And
well,
Long Beach, the head narc in Long Beach was arrested today.
Right. Well, that sounds
good. I don't know
good.
What happened to their planning.
Of course, we need the head narc in Santa Cruz arrested. That would be even better.
You need a new city attorney and a new.
Oh, I agree.
And a new city manager. There is no written law that says, God, Santa Cruz, we have to be nice to people just because they have been doing a job. City managers in every other city in the state of California turn over every 3 to 5 years.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely, because you don't get any fresh blood. You don't get any new ideas.
Do you have any stats?
You know, a lot of people screw up on budgets and the laundering in the planning department.
Madison, do you have any stats that actually would document that there's a 3 to 5 year turnover in other city managers?
Yeah, I don't, but I know tons of city managers. I've known them for years, and just go look.
Because I would love to get that kind of information, because I think Dick Wilson has been there since 1984.
So is that the name of the guy that denied
Emily Riley?
Dick Wilson. He is, in fact, our own Dick, so to speak.
I mean, Emily's great at cookies. She's a nice person. Maybe she works on the arts commission, but yeah, having a clue? Give me a break. Look at all these people that have had to resign from.
Well, Madison, I saw you. Madison, I saw you down at the protest. On Sunday. What was your feeling about the protest?
I thought that the Federal Bureau of Investigation employees were outnumbering the homeless.
You say the G-men outnumbered
like
the homeless?
The undercovers watching everyone.
Madison, I think you've been drinking too much of the.
No, I haven't. I started taking pictures, and everyone gets pissed off. Well,
I expect
why.
A full document of all the photos. I want the file, Madison.
Robert, you guys just need to wake up. You don't understand how
no,
much.
No, I
want to
see
Robert.
Evidence, Madison. Otherwise, I will not jump into your paranoid world. But I do
you're
thank
allowing,
you. For,
you're allowing.
I thank you for calling, though.
With your attitude, Robert.
I'm
but
trying
anyways,
to be honest, Madison.
Go.
My.
You know, the schools are getting sued in Santa Cruz too. Did you see that on Channel 5?
You know, I don't want to run to other topics at this time.
The schools are getting sued. I know. But you're right. Just keep at it, kids.
Thank you. And phone lines are open for. For you to call in, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, hey, we have in the studio two from the protest. And I guess you can talk to them. They'll be at City Hall later tonight and tomorrow until they're completely burnt to a crisp, and former activists who are just completely exhausted and have nothing more to give whatsoever. Actually, I think they'll probably go on vacation first. Maybe there'll be a second crew will come in to spell them, perhaps.
The fun part is we started doing this on vacation. We came out here from Arizona on vacation.
I see.
And
well, you know what they say, you come to Santa Cruz on vacation, leave on probation.
You know, I've heard that a couple times. Mm-hmm. I've heard that a couple times. I used to live in Santa Cruz. As a matter of fact, I lived here when the River Street, Coral Street shelter was still the open-air shelter.
And you were a monitor in that shelter.
And I was a security monitor for that shelter overnight.
And let's clarify it. By shelter, it actually was a tent city that people set up their own tents. It was relatively loosely monitored in the sense that people did alcohol and drugs inside tents, but not publicly.
If they did, I didn't see it.
Okay. But you weren't sticking your nose in every tent trying to police everything down, right?
Have you smelled some of these people's feet?
I don't think I have, actually.
You don't want
it. But I do remember that in 1996, it was a place that there was where there was a lot of people together as a rather crowded community with rather inadequate sanitation facilities that was destroyed and dispersed by Mayor Rotkin and Vice Mayor Kennedy. I think he was also on the council. And they claimed that the sewage had overflowed and there was violence and drugs, and it was a complete failure as an experiment because everyone came to the campground from all over the world. and it was just an example of something that they couldn't allow to continue. What was your reaction to
actually
that?
There are allegations that there were needles and sewage and violence and everything is totally inaccurate, because not only did I monitor the place, but it also helps during the day for the shower bays. They have a sanitary bay built into the shelter, and they were open then as well, and I helped work in the kitchen because, you know, again, I do prefer to do the right thing, and the right thing is to help out when you can. And the whole time I was there, and I was there well over a year and a half, the whole time I was there, there may have been three fights total. The needles that were found, maybe in the year I worked there, I think we found maybe four needles. The sewage, well, the Porta John's outside, we weren't given the proper funding from, city manager, to continue to keep our John's flushed out. They had the Porta John's out in the field, and then during the day, of course, they had the hygiene bay open so that people could use actual plumbing. But they never overflowed. If they'd ever got to that point, then, of course, we would have pulled them out.
I know that the excuse used was there was a flood, heavy rains happened around mid-December. The campground had come together as many of them on a group called SOS, Save Our Shelter, under activists like Dan Hopkins and Sherry Connable, and they had, you know, gotten a pledge from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that ran that campground that they would not disperse before January 1st or 10 days after there was a decision to begin construction, because the campground is now situated on what is now Page Smith Community House.
And the
Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I think, eventually sold the property to the city. And Page Smith, of course, was part of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. He's now dead. He was a historian at the time. One of the original activists, housed activists, who fought for the homeless back in the 80s, along with Jane Immler and Paul Lee and Paul Fotenhauer, all these kind of now very elderly or gone figures. And, you know, it's interesting because what you had here, you had an attempt to put up a tent today,
yep,
much prettier and cleaner and more spacious tent than ever appeared at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
It was essentially a $400 tent, and I don't think if we had set that out in the Poconip Forest or if we had set that out anywhere else, I don't think it would have survived the police interaction. They came in strong, and they were looking really kind of ticked. So it's about a $400 tent, though, somebody set up out there.
Well, maybe we should. I can play a little of the tape now so people can hear the interaction. It's not terribly dramatic, though some campers were very upset, quite properly so. And also a number of the campers, I guess the woman whose tent it was quite intimidated by the whole thing.
She was very scared. I mean, she really didn't ask questions like we've been talked by you in your Huff demonstrations and Huff, you know, teach-ins and stuff like that. And she kind of just, I think she froze up by the number of cops, which is really uncalled for when they all know we're there.
Right. Well, of course, that's one of their purposes. A large show of force is supposed to make you more obedient, act more quickly and more silently and follow orders and hustle off and surrender your rights as quickly as possible and move right along. And indeed, what I've been telling campers, and I guess what some campers have been doing, and the police have kind of been acknowledging this because they have been giving more tickets, is before you get a ticket from a police officer, you say, you know, am I free to go back to sleep? In other words, am I free to just stop talking to you? And if they say no, you know, because I'm here to give you a ticket, then you say, well, can you give me a legal place to sleep? And when they acknowledge that they can't do that, they set themselves up for harassment charges later in terms of a lawsuit. We have a caller. Maybe it's a police officer who will give us her perspective. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Are you a police officer, perhaps?
Yeah, you're under arrest.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got to come down here and serve us with an arrest warrant if you want to do that.
Okay. Will you spread them for me?
well, it depends on who you are. And
well, this is Crow, the man with the shitty city sewage problem solver here.
Yes. Now, you were there the first night, Crow. You when there was no bathroom, when there was no RV, you came in and came up with a suggestion
you did too.
Well, the two of us came up with an idea that I found a portable bedside commode, and you found a kind of a bag with poo-poo dispersing chemicals.
Yes, it's a biodegradable bag that they sell at West Marine.
And because Emily Riley refused to open the restrooms, and she was approached before the city manager, I think by one of the human rights organization activists, Bernard Klitzner, over the weekend, she did respond with an email that said, gee, Bernard, how many people are coming, and blah, blah, blah. But she never gave any, you know, she never gave authorization for one of these bathrooms just to be opened up at night, even though I think your group would have taken pretty good care of it, and I think they still were taking
actually,
care of it.
Actually, we still swear that if they open the bathroom for us so we can use it, we'll supply our own toilet paper, and the bathroom would be cleaner when we go in it than when we leave it.
Crow, do you believe these people? Aren't they the lying homeless who are...
Oh, yeah, the drug addicts, the thieves, the pissers and the shitters that...
Yeah, they're just spoiling our town. So I'm taking a chance having them in the studio even as we speak.
They're
eyeing the property suspiciously.
Actually, this radio station does have some neat equipment.
Get your hands
bat.
Off that microphone. All right, that's better than me.
That's not a microphone.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Hey, girl, how you doing, brother?
Doing good. Hey, what time do you want me to meet you down there tonight?
You're supposed to meet me, Crow, to we had arranged to get together so we can do a TV presentation of the famous, actually little-known video by Paul Brindell, The Sitting Ban in Santa Cruz. Right? It's called Sitting in Santa Cruz, about a resistance to another unjust law 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And I would say meet me down there at 8:30.
Okay.
You told us 9 o'clock.
Let's make it 8:45. Why not?
Ooh.
Yeah, well, I got to drop the equipment off of somebody because I got an appointment to go to. And
Bro, Demon and Jeremy are both there, and they're capable.
All right, that's fine. I'm going to bring the TV down and all the stuff, and...
You're not hanging out?
And the battery. I have arrangements to meet somebody at 9 o'clock.
Come on, bro.
All right, well, I could try to be down there by 8:45. That would be good, because I think, much as I trust Damone and Jeremy, I think, and they can handle it, I'm sure, but it's just, I know that some of the...
responsibility
some of the it's not my stuff,
anyway.
But, I'm sure they can handle it, but, we'll set it up and go for it, and, of course, there's going to be a lot of noise. The trash orchestra is going to be booming away down there.
Oh, they should be there now, giving it ill.
Yeah, perhaps they are. All right.
Very good.
Well, thank you, Crow, and, may the poo-poo be with you.
Yes. May the fart be with you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Be good, brother.
Again, we have a phone line open for any officer who wants to call in. I suspect none will. None has ever called this show explicitly.
Officer Harms, man, and he's got to be
Sergeant
listening.
Harms.
He's got to be listening.
I don't know. Sergeant Harms probably has better things to do than listen to a bunch of, activists on free radio. Perhaps he is listening. Who knows? Sergeant Harms.
We got his phone number.
I know you guys think a lot of Sergeant Harms because he offered to. He brought you coffee one
day. There he is.
Could this be Sergeant Harms? Sergeant Harms, call home. Is it you?
Hi, Robert.
Oh, hi. Who's this?
Shane.
Hey, Shane. Are you down there at the protest?
Yes, I am.
Aren't you the man who supplies coffee and a poo-poo machine to the homeless?
Yeah, I've got my RV out here with a toilet and the cooking facilities, and I got my generator for power and to charge your laptops and cell phones and stuff like that.
So you guys listening on the radio down there?
Yes.
Righteous.
So yeah. any comments or criticisms? Are we putting out the right vibe here? What do you think?
Yeah, it'd be really cool. Really cool. And if somebody could help us get some propane, that'd be even better.
Yeah, we are running short on propane for the for your
out.
RV. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're gonna run out, and the resources get used up fast, unfortunately. But it does cost money to maintain the toilet and the food, the cooking and all that stuff.
How much does propane cost, Shane?
It's like $2.50 a gallon.
And how much
Five gallons per tank. So you need
a couple gallons of propane?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Actually, about $15 would fill his propane tank up for anybody who's listening. And filling that tank up would last almost a week for what was going on out there.
That's right. It goes a long way. It does go a long way. We came here already on running our second tank, so we started it.
Hey, I don't hear drums down there.
Already late into it, but
how is the trash orchestra? Hey, Shane, how's the trash orchestra going down there?
The what?
The orchestra, the trash orchestra.
Oh, the trash orchestra. Well, they have a few small trash cans in the back that are way all the way in the back against the wall, and I wouldn't call it adequate garbage collection, but we're making do.
No. I think you misunderstand. The Trash Orchestra is supposed to be a band that's playing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Did they show up?
I didn't know. I don't see anything happening yet, but I did hear something about a band coming back earlier.
Maybe they will, because I know that Rico Thunder kind of scoped out the area. He was wandering around in plain clothes while the police were there. He came up in a green hat disguised as some sort of Swiss salesman. And so he may be showing up with his band, so we'll see if he shows up.
So well, that was him?
That was him.
Well, he's sneaky. He's sneaky.
He's pretty sneaky, that Rico Thunder.
I'm being asked to provide the equipment to play a movie for everybody, which I've set up, and everyone wants to watch a movie tonight, so we'll be watching a movie tonight, too.
Right, that's going to be, we've actually talked about that. That's the 1994 movie Sitting in Santa Cruz, which I brought down from my retreat. And
We've also got a selection of a few other movies after that. If people are still interested in watching some movies, we went to the library, checked out a few movies. We got like Gone with the Wind, the Charlie Chaplin story, a few other you know, good movies, just regular movies to kind of relieve the pressure of the protesters down there so that it's not so heavy, because they're starting to miss where they come from, you know, whether they're camping outside or in an RV or, you know, they live in a house. They're getting burnt out.
So, anything else happening, Shane, that I should know about, or we should all know about here?
No, they made us take the tent down, but that was okay. And Damon is going to call in right now.
All right, we'll get her call.
All right.
All right, thank you, Shane, and thanks again for all your work making a bathroom available, but apparently the city's too damn cheap or too essentially barbaric to do so. You've done so.
Right. Well, if anybody wants to bring any donations, just knock on the RV window or whatever and just tell, you know, just call for Shane or Donna or whatever.
Sounds good.
And we'll be happy.
Okay.
We'll keep helping them out. We'll keep doing this as much as we can for them.
How can people identify your vehicle?
It's a Sun Raider. It's a white 20-foot Sun Raider, Toyota Sun Raider RV. It's right in front of the place. And the door is wide open so that the bathroom's available.
Okay. All right, that's down at City Hall across from the main library. Thank you, Shane.
Right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Robert.
All right, man.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are now open, and perhaps we'll get that call from Damone.
Who has
been another, actually she's a survivor of Dignity Village up in Portland, Oregon. That could
there
be
she
her
she
right
is.
Now. Hi, you're on the air with You Know Who and me as well.
Yes, this is Damone.
Hey, girl.
Okay.
So how are you doing, Damone?
I am doing good, other than having the altercation.
Don't listen on the radio. Turn off your radio. You have,
or walk away.
Put it away from you, or walk away from it. Otherwise, you'll get confused. There's a delay.
Wait a minute. We started out confused.
You get more confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Can you hear us, Damone?
Yes.
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I am the tent owner, and... I had asked the police today, the tent is a $475 tent, to be exact. It houses 18 people. They said, when I asked them, why are you here? Am I doing something wrong? They said, yes, you are doing something wrong. Setting up a tent anywhere in Santa Cruz County is setting up a dwelling. And it is more than a camping ticket. I talked to Officer Mendez. He said for me setting up my tent, if they wanted to find me, they could have finded me and my husband $1,000.
So it goes beyond the camping ban that we're already fighting, doesn't it? It steps up into a new level, because we're looking at not only can't we camp, but we can't shelter ourselves when the rains come. Now, I don't know anybody in Santa Cruz. If you live here, you've seen the monsoons. They can be deadly to the homeless. We've got to have shelters out there, but we're going to pay $1,000 to erect a tent when we can't afford $1,000 for an apartment.
Right, well, it's not even $1,000 to erect a tent. It's, you erect a tent, they'll tear it down, take the tent, and charge you $1,000.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they were threatening if I did not take down my tent that they were going to slice it down.
They're going to slice it?
Yes.
Did they use that word, or did they use another word?
They said that they would destroy it and slice my tent.
Really?
That's just destruction of personal property. They can't do that.
Yeah,
see, unless our civil liberties is taken into
account. And actually, the same issue happened in Fresno. And Pam Kincaid and a number of other homeless people filed a lawsuit which have stopped the Fresno authorities from, which they were random, they were bulldozing tents and grabbing homeless property and throwing it away. And in fact, they do that in Santa Cruz. Ranger Wallace roams the Pogonip, marking tents, and then they can come back with a crew in 3 days, and they destroy these tents.
Even in 3 days. They do it within 24 hours.
Really? Well, he claims to have a longer time, but I certainly would believe, you know, I, whatever it is, they're not supposed to destroy it at all. They're supposed to store it pending a determination of, you know, and if it's evidence of a crime, they can hold it for a while until the trial is over, but then they return the material to you. I mean, a tent is not illegal as an object. You know, what is illegal is your homeless status. They just don't want to fucking see you. Get out of town, Damone.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere.
Like I told the six officers that were ganging up on me that I am not going anywhere. I am here. I am staying until the mayor and them get in their head that is not illegal to camp and sleep.
Yeah. Damone, I love you.
Yeah, Damone, good
They're
work.
Violating our constitutional rights, which is Amendment 3, Number 8 on the Constitution, and Number 14.
They are, yeah, that's the 14th Amendment, of course, makes the Constitution applicable to the states as well, yeah.
Well,
the only county where you cannot sleep because it's Santa Cruz County. Everywhere else in California, the Jones Law has been passed. In California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Utah, and Nevada.
Well, it's certainly true that the Ninth Circuit Court decision covers all those states, but it's also unfortunately true that only three cities have really recognized the Jones decision. They are big cities. I mean, Richmond changed its law. Los Angeles is under an injunction and Skid Row, and San Diego reached a settlement with its homeless this spring. Otherwise,
and Portland, Oregon.
Well, Portland, Oregon, of course, was before the Jones decision. They did their that was the what was it called? The Witt, the Wilkes, the
Wick decision.
That's right, the Wick decision. That was a local decision, which held their own sleeping ban unconstitutional. Actually, their own camping ban unconstitutional.
You know, in Arizona, where Amanda and I are from, the homeless situation, I guess, isn't as dire as I had originally believed it to be, because out there, if it's a national forest, you got 14 days legally. You can leave for 3 days and then come back. 14 days legally, leave for 3 days and come back, and you can do that year-round out there.
Where me and Jeremy are originally from is Portland, Oregon. It is 14 days. If you move your camp 10 feet, you can take and do another 14 days.
Now, do they set a limit on that?
They do not.
Okay, so what's up with Santa Cruz?
Well, in Santa Cruz, what you have is you have really much more punitive laws, because I don't think there's any national forests around here. There's state campgrounds.
Pogonip National Forest.
That's not national. That's owned by the city.
Oh, is it?
Yes, and the state campgrounds that are legal, you're allowed 2 months out of the year.
Actually, not in Santa Cruz. They have especially restrictive rules here. You can only stay for 2 weeks, and you have to leave, and then you can only stay for a total of 1 month per year total in the Santa Cruz campground. That's not the case in any other state campground, as I understand it. Santa Cruz is particularly concerned with homeless people using the campgrounds to live in. You see, that's not acceptable. To live is not right for the homeless people.
Okay, so what the basic idea I'm getting about Santa Cruz is that they just truly don't like anybody that doesn't have the almighty dollar.
You know, you need money to make money, son. I mean, after all, this is a wealthy area. You know, you've got, if you don't like it, why don't you move to Tijuana?
Are they trying to hide us behind a bush, under a rug, under a rock?
Under a gravestone, if they have their way, from the sounds of it, because once again, when the winter hits, there's going to be a lot of homeless suffering for this.
Now, Damone,
why have you on the phone? Jeremy would like to talk to you too.
Okay, before you go, Damone, any comments about Portland and And then what do you hear from up there?
I get letters every day from Portland because I was one of the original five that went in to get the camping ban, no scent, no lie law passed. There was originally five of us for Dignity Village. Now they have a 10-year lease. They have built Cobb House and a straw dough with mud. They have moved those houses where they are at to 5 acres, and the city has gave them a 10-year lease, rent-free.
Okay, you know, Damone, what I think I'm going to do, because it sounds like I don't want you to lose your voice for the next time the police come in, or anybody else for that matter. We'll talk more about this later. And you said Jeremy wants to say something?
Yes.
Thank you very much, by the way, for putting up that tent. Thank you for facing the police, and thank you for all the work you've been doing out there.
And thank you guys for putting us on the radio.
Hey, that's
I love you, Damone.
We'll see you when we get back.
See you, Amanda. See you when you get back to our protesters.
Yay.
All right.
My partner in crime.
Hello, this is Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bubba.
What's you up to?
So, Jeremy, you're on the radio. Anything you want to say to the Santa Cruz listeners?
Yeah, I mean, we're not here to cause a problem. We're not here to, cause negativity within the neighborhood. But we're here to state that if they're going to say we can't have a place to sleep at night, they could have, and they want to arrest us and all this and that, when we could be doing such better other, such worse things in life. You know, we could look at it. We could be, instead of sleeping, we could be out there robbing banks, shooting dope. No, we're out here trying to protest for a greater cause. You know, we're not trying to cause problems. I don't want to give the public that image.
But Jeremy, we're not out there trying to stir up trouble?
No, we're not trying to stir up trouble. We're just trying to get our point across and get ourselves a place to sleep.
Maybe just a little trouble, Jeremy.
Well, hey, the way I look at it is, if they won't give us a place to sleep, by damn it, we'll sleep on their front steps till they decide different.
But don't think we're out here trying to cause problems and just turn this into like a big, you know, mosh area for, uncontrollable, you know, way of life, when we're really, you know, trying to gather too, which is a challenge within the four of us.
Well, there's more than four of us now, Jeremy. You got to take into consideration. We've got Chris out there, and we've got Bar out there, you know, kind of monitoring the situation in the background, keeping people from doing things that are going to hurt themselves or others. So we got the folks in the RV who are just so generous, it's not even believable, plus the four of us, and we've got Robert, who's been there, you know, the whole time giving us advice and, you know, basically being a mentor for a bunch of people who have never really tried to organize and do something like this before, and we've got the wonderful public who really is standing behind us.
And you can't forget my doggy Nikki, the bunny rabbits, or Mama.
Yeah, Sugar Mama's out here.
Hey, Jeremy.
What's up? What do you want to know, homie?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just going to move on here, unless there's something more you want to say.
No, just keep calling in and giving us your info. It seems nice. Bye, everybody.
Hey, thanks.
Hi, Jeremy.
Love you, Jeremy.
Thanks, Jeremy. And phone line's open, 427-3772. What's your view? Should homeless people be tolerated at City Hall? Why don't they go back where they came from? Where you two came from, Arizona. Why didn't you stay there? What are you doing in Santa Cruz anyway?
Our car got stolen.
That too.
Car got stolen.
Well, car got stolen.
We came out here on vacation. While we're on vacation, our car gets stolen from us, and put us in a pretty deep predicament. But we were out here anyway. Our vacation, instead of doing it like everybody else and going to Bali or going to Hawaii or something, we said, "Let's be hippies."
Let's be hippies.
And it turned into something that meant a little more than we thought, because part of being a hippie is actually being active in your community and letting people know, hey, wait a minute, that's really a stupid law. Why is it in place? And we saw this law with the camping ban, and that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And it's deeper than I thought. I've just learned a couple new facts about it, that $1,000 to erect this shelter. What are these politicians thinking? Are they out of their minds?
They want you out of their city, I think, is the deal.
Good luck with that. We're sleeping on their step.
I mean, I think, you know, there's the conditions create homeless people, and particularly homeless people who are born here, some who've lived here for many years, some who just came here. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is the idea that people cannot allow to sleep legally somewhere at night, and I'm not talking about fancy Rolls Royce places, but just the right to be left alone is a serious problem. Now, often we have callers who will call in, not often, occasionally we have callers who will call in and say, well, what about the messes homeless people make? Now, the trash they leave behind, the litter, the needles, the filth, the feces.
I'm gonna say, yeah, that does happen. There are some homeless people out there who really don't care what they live in, and they will live in their own filth. But for every one of those, you've got 10 others who just want to go to work at a day labor company, who just want to survive the best way. They're on Social Security. They can't afford $1,500 plus move-in, plus deposit, plus attorney fees just to get a friggin' apartment on Social Security, which sometimes, the most I've heard so far, pays out $800 a month. You can't afford to live on that, so they end up on the streets, on the strip, homeless, going to shelters. When the shelters are full, like you have in Santa Cruz, you only got 40 beds, and there's 2,000 homeless people today.
And again, I suggest if anybody wants to be a part of this sleep out, you can always bring your sleeping bag down, as I did one night. And who knows?
And your bathrobe.
And I brought my bathrobe, and my teddy bear was also not far behind. I think that was Eduardo, the police teddy bear, keeping an eye on things.
That was Eduardo.
That was Eduardo. And it looked really very nice. Last night I walked through and I saw all of these sleeping bags laid out very neatly, and everything was, it looked like almost an organized campground. I mean, it was much more impressive than campouts I've seen in the past. And I've seen a number of these sleep-out protests over the years. As I said, this one is a bit different because I think campers are armed with the knowledge that when the police come to say, get up and leave, they have the option to say to the police, well, if you can, you show me a legal place to go and sleep. And the same thing is true with the person with the tent. The person can say the same thing. Are you got a place for me to go, or I can protect myself with that tent? And you're going to hear now, I think I'll play the interaction with the sergeant and the five police officers backing him up, forcing Damone and others to disassemble the tent under threat of, I guess, destruction of the tent. And it's coming on soon, folks. Don't give up. You're tuned to Free Radio.
Okay, well, it's about 5:50. I'm here at City Hall on August 17th. We have about four police officers and a large tent with Damone. How's it going there, Damone?
She can't even sit without being arrested.
Damone is taking up her tent spike, it looks like.
Yeah, because they threatened me about being up.
So what's happening? Why are you here, Sergeant Goodwin? What's going on?
They put up a tent. The tent is establishing a campground against
protest tent without the intention to remain overnight.
So the law says you can't establish a campground. What you're doing, a campsite, that's what you're doing. We're just here to have to take down the tent.
That's the truth. At least I can tell the truth about what we do. Officer, fucking liar.
Well, this is this a tent with the intention of remaining overnight, or is this a tent intended to show a face to the city about the fact that there's a camping ban that criminalizes?
The tent be put up to show the face that there is a sleeping ban on us that we are fighting.
So you don't necessarily intend to stay the night with this tent?
To show our protest.
Of this protest. Because that's what it is.
And if you say you intend to stay the night, in theory, although their law is unconstitutional, they have the right to cite you under 6.36010C, which is camping overnight. But, of course, that's, unless they have some alternative place. If you ask them if they have some other place for you to sleep tonight?
My answer is this. Their law should never supersede the constitutional laws. They are not better than the Constitution.
I understand. Did you ask, any of you guys ask if these officers? Well, you should ask these officers. Damone, why don't you ask these officers if they have a place for you to go tonight before you disassemble the tent? Want to ask them?
Nope.
Okay.
They have an officer in the campground in the city center.
What
as far
was
as
I know.
Officer, may I ask?
I'm sorry?
After you get your response, I didn't hear you too well.
I said there are no campgrounds in the city of Santa Cruz as far as I know.
That's Sergeant Goodwin speaking, the police officer leading the raid.
I think you're accurate, Sergeant Goodwin.
He may be accurate, but what right does he have to take people's constitutional rights from them?
Well, that's a good point.
Everyone has to sleep this way.
So did you receive a complaint, or did you just notice this tent going up, Sergeant? I received a from a superior, from a private citizen?
Superior.
Do you know if there was a complaint filed by a citizen? Or?
I do not know.
So we also have officers, Terry, Medina. It is Officer Medina still? After all these years? Oh, boy. Well, maybe that's at your request? Okay. And, officer, how do I pronounce your name, officer?
Amy.
Amy, thank you. So, and there's another officer over here. That's five officers, and I've counted at least four squad cars, probably five. It's a nice-looking tent you've got up here, John.
Yeah, it belongs to a couple of the people who were in here protesting, and they felt that setting it up would actually make the political statement that for the past few days seems to have been missed. I mean, we've been camping on the City Hall lawn, and they're missing the statement. And so we figured we'd up the ante a little bit, and now they see us.
Well, maybe you should set this tent up downtown on Pacific Avenue. That might be more appropriate down there.
Not really. If you think of it, yes, we'd be hitting them in their wallet, and that is a valuable...
No, I'm not saying this is a good idea here, but here the tourists don't see the police forcing you to disassemble the... The only people who see it are the campers and the City Hall staff.
It's not tourists I'm after. I'm after City Hall. I'm after the mayor. I'm after her cabinet to come and help me.
Don't let the cops touch him. My God. They might get the Holy Ghost in and start acting like they demons here. It was federal.
So it's a nice-looking tent. How big is this tent? This is a fairly...
This is 16-man tent comfortably.
Uh-huh.
18-man? 18-man tent, and it was bought by two of the protesters for roughly $400. This was going to be their home.
Oh, wow.
But they were told they couldn't camp.
So I see a mattress is being taken out of it. It looks pretty clean. I don't see any cleanliness problems here.
It is clean, because right after they bought it, the police department and or the forest department told them, no, you cannot have this structure. You cannot shelter yourself to sleep at night.
So, it might be appropriate to... if somebody sets it up again to get a citation for it, of course you might lose the tent as evidence.
That's more than likely the option that the police department at this point would take is to indeed confiscate the shelter. And these people can't afford to lose a $400 tent to make a political statement. They can't afford to lose some time and lose some sleep to be out here on City Hall and out on Pacific Avenue petitioning, but... That's a major expense in anybody's wallet. Working man living in a house, living outside, that's a major expense.
I actually want to come to the radio station and talk more about this live on the air. That's where I'm headed now.
Yeah, I'd like to. My wife as well.
Okay. That sounds good.
Let's resolve this issue first.
Okay, well, I've got to go, so maybe I can meet you there at some point.
We really don't have transportation. My bike's gone missing from one of the other people that were doing the protests.
He's still gone, eh?
I see. Yeah, what time is this? The radio show
starts at 6.
All right, well, let's close this off and kick on then.
Well, I mean, this is like more of a crisis. You have officers here, so I guess I'll be a little late. I'll wait for a bit.
Can you play commercial interruption or anything while you're...
Oh, I can keep doing other stuff, but, I mean, you need to, we need to get over there pretty soon.
Two more officers behind you.
Yes, we have a total of 6 police officers here to deal with one tent.
One erection on City Hall, which tells me that indeed we have actually attracted the notice that we were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily how we wanted it, but at the same time we did up the ante and say hi. We really are here.
We're not going to supersede the Constitution anymore. No more.
Say that again.
These local laws will never again supersede the Constitution of the United States. No more. We're not standing for it.
What's your name there, camper?
My name is Barr. Barr!
Thank you, Barr. So, Sergeant Goodman, as I understand it, you don't have any place for these people to sleep tonight legally. Is that accurate?
Me personally? No, as far as I know.
The police force is
is demanding they disassemble a tent on penalty of criminal prosecution, but not providing them with any alternative place to go sleep or cover up or protect themselves. That's the accurate statement. You're doing so under orders, I understand, and it might not be your personal preference, but that's what you're doing, in fact, at the moment, right?
Correct. Actually, the complaint was from city employees.
Now, were they concerned about maybe they wanted to mow the grass, or they just didn't like the sight of the tent, or the idea of somebody sleeping here upset them? What was their problem?
They just basically complained that the tent was here, was in violation of the
city code,
and they wanted it removed.
Gotcha. City manager or a lowly employee, I mean, there's a 9/11 dispatch tape where we can recover the name of the complainant if we want, presumably. Who is the complainant?
I mean, give you public information I'm going to give you.
So I have to get it?
Recover it, you can.
Okay.
It is public information. You got through those channels.
Right. So, but the reason you don't want to give it is are you sympathetic with the complainant, or what is your feeling on that?
No, not at all. Neither sympathetic or apathetic, just
following orders.
Well, I think it's the nature that, I think a lot of people assume that when they make a complaint, that complaint's not going to be splashed out, all over through, some sort of public access. So we try to maintain a certain amount of confidentiality to that extent. I mean, obviously the information can be gotten if somebody really wants it.
I don't know yet. Hold on.
That's a very common complaint of people that they really didn't want their name released.
But if it's public information and I ask you for it, there's no reason whatsoever why you can't give it to me except your own personal choice.
Well, actually, there are general orders within our police department that talks about confidentiality of information. And how that information gets released. Basically, it says that we have to be taken into consideration the sensitivity of information, and that we have a way that, we have a press officer that can release information, and that's where we channel that information through.
And actually, it's not a press officer that releases information. It's the police department itself, from the files, a press officer releases information to the media. But if, for example, we want to find out what cranky city employee called the police to demand enforcement of the camping ordinance, it wasn't even clear to me what ordinance the police were enforcing here. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and the studio with me are Amanda and John
Barnett.
Actually, I was going to say that, but I'm falling asleep. I guess I'm in sympathy with the sleepers at City Hall. As I was explaining, there is a section of the camping ordinance that says you can't camp overnight with the intention of remaining overnight. But setting up a tent per se, unless you intend to remain overnight, is not illegal. So, for example, you could set up a tent and intend to, as a demonstration, to take down in a couple hours. They have to prove that you did this with the intent to remain overnight. And, of course, this is something that, they might find fairly easy to prove if people are shouting, "We're going to stay here all night, you fuckers!" And alternately, you might want to say, "We sure as hell are going to stay overnight unless you provide a legal place for us. Your entire approach is unconstitutional." It's really an interesting question. How do you deal with the police? What kind of approach are you going to use in any situation? What strategy you're going to use? And then, aside from all the tricks and traps and strategies, there's the basic moral issue, which is, why is the police department and the city manager and the city council spending so much energy trying to deal with an issue that could really be dealt with quite economically by setting up a campground and a car park, and dealing with even only a portion of the homeless community, maybe the ones that have been here 10 years or some bullshit like that. Not that I would still be fighting for the rights of everybody, but this could be at least something they could try if they had any interest at all, other than this absurd fig leaf they have that claims that somehow there's, even though there's inadequate shelter, that they're legal because homeless people can sleep during the day between 8:30 in the morning and 11 o'clock at night because their sleeping ban is only a nighttime ban. I think that they don't really believe this, because if they did, they would be ticketing you much more heavily to get rid of you, but they aren't. because they recognize that there is no legal place to go, and they can't use the excuse that there's a time to sleep during the day. They realize that if they get to court, they're likely to get their asses sued off. But, of course, because we're such inept and underfunded activists in this town, and we don't have the resources, it takes us a long time to get them together, and we still are fundraising for this lawsuit. I mean, you're fundraising for flyers, we're fundraising for a lawsuit. It's actually very important, these kind of actions where people stand up and state, you know, I'm not going to take this kind of bullshit anymore. And do so in an intelligent, united, solid, and you can be angry. It's perfectly appropriate to be angry. Way, I mean, having six police officers intimidating a woman who's trying to help out her fellow campers in this way is kind of despicable, really. And I don't think the police officers felt that good about it, actually, and they shouldn't. And I was being too nice to the cops. But the problem is, if you yell at them, there's nobody listening. Mm-hmm. All the staff is gone when you get there at 5:30 or 5:45. That's why I guess there's been a discussion that this whole thing be taken to Pacific Avenue. And I know that originally was vetoed because the thought was, well, you want to organize people and get more of a critical mass of people together. And there's also the concern that I know a lot of you are feeling kind of a burnout from this, and a feeling that, you know, you got to find some way to rest and not get at each other's throats. So I've seen, I guess there have been less fights at the camp, less disputes. There weren't that many disputes, but there were a couple disputes that seemed a little hairy for a while. And I'm going to turn up your microphone, but, you know, you better say the right things. Go ahead.
Yeah, censorship on Freak Radio.
We don't censor. We just select, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's what the city council is doing, selecting the people that they want to serve.
Well, they try to be selectively enforcing certain laws, you know.
And they are really good. You said that there's not a lot of fighting, and, you know, there's really not. I mean, in some cases, when you get a bunch of strange people together who really don't know each other, of course, there's going to be disagreements. But for the most part, everybody that's there that believes in what's going on, we're pulling together because of the plain simple fact we're all in need of a place to sleep.
We're talking to the people sleeping at City Hall now, going into their fifth night there.
Who sleeps? We get a couple hours of sleep a night, and then generally we're back up doing other things to keep this going.
Well, don't forget to get more sleep, and that'll enable you to keep it going longer if you decide you want to do that.
See that, or I'll drop over dead on the lawn, and again, they'll notice it.
They can bury you on the lawn, but that probably require a permit, too, and you can't.
I'm sure it does.
Actually, they won't be able to.
No, they'd give me a ticket for littering. Dead.
Right, well, dead, yeah.
No, they'd give me the ticket for littering.
Yeah, okay.
That's true.
Okay.
So if people are interested, I would encourage people to wander on down to City Hall and take a look at what's going on, particularly tonight, because they're having an orchestral shindig with the Trash Orchestra, orchestrated by Rico Thunder and other drumsters. And then you're going to have a video, which I guess we're going to present it, because it sounds like the video equipment is showing up. Not the fine on-the-wall big-time video that we had on Sunday, but a smaller look at the postage-size TV set. Actually, not the postage size, but it's pretty small.
About the size of a postcard instead of a postage.
A 13-inch screen. It's, yeah. You know, like the size of a, I don't know, half a sheet of paper or something. But you can still kind of see what's going on, and you'll be able to see the history of the Santa Cruz protest movement that actually stopped the Santa Cruz sitting ban. The original sitting ban that was passed in 1994 was much worse than the current ban. You couldn't sit on any sidewalk anywhere in the city unless you were having, you know, an emergency, unless you were disabled, unless you had a permit, or unless you were watching a parade. I believe those were the conditions, and it was intended to ban all sitting. And because they decided that was a good way to get rid of people who weren't using the cafes and maybe generate a little money for okay. the sidewalk cafes.
You know, when politicians start looking at their wallets instead of looking at the people that they're supposed to serve, it is the decline of a nation. It's the destruction of a nation. If you don't believe me, read some books. It's out there.
Well, what happened with the sitting ban was that we tried to protest. We all sat down in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, which, because at that time, Neil Coonerty, who owned the bookshop, was the mayor the previous year, and he was also one of the lead people behind that law. But the police very wisely didn't do anything. They let us sit down. They ignored their own law. And then they went off and they picked off people a couple days later who were sitting when there was not a lot of people around. And, you know, we tried to protest, but it was kind of hard to focus on that because the police ignore you. You can't do a big civil disobedience action because you get tired. You want to go home and do something else, you know.
Yeah.
So what happened, however, was the police made a mistake. In May of 1994, we used to serve food outside what is now Taqueria Vallarta. It was an empty lot, and it was right across from 1010 Pacific right now on Cathcart and Pacific. Food Not Bombs served food every week there. And they went and they started arresting the people who were serving free food, or citing them for sitting.
Non-custodial arrests.
This really pissed people off. So the next week, we organized masses of people to come down. We called people from Berkeley. We called people from San Francisco. And you'll see this on the video this evening. And they came down. Food Not Bombs came down from San Francisco. Keith McHenry was fighting his own case up there. People came from the People's Park area in Berkeley. And, you know, in buses. We came in nearly, not quite that many, but there were, we must have had 20 or 30 from out of town.
See, I'd like to see a continual week of that kind of turnout with that many people, but just Santa Cruzians, just the people that it directly affects.
Well,
have Santa Cruz out there saying, hey, you know what, you're doing this in my name, you're doing this with my tax dollars, what the hell?
Well,
and then on top of that, have the exact same number of Santa Cruz people from any other place that they want to come from, San Francisco, L.A.
Well, indeed, we had, of course, the three from Los Angeles. General Dogan showed up with his two African-American associates from L.A. Can, right in the middle of the L.A. zone, the Skid Row zone that has overturned the sleeping ban in L.A. And he's been encouraging us. He's called a couple times on the phone. He wants to know what's going on. He says he's going to get an ACLU attorney to help us. I tell him, I'll believe it when I see it. But, you know, thank you. I hope that happens.
I would actually like to see them come back up for a weekend or something, spend the weekend out there with us, and try to help us generate the feeling of outrage that the Santa Cruz community should really have. You know, I'm doing the best I can, but I'm one out of the four of us, I guess I'm the most outspoken. But while we have Amanda in, she's looking at me all hard. What?
Anyway, let me finish what happened. This video is coming up from 1994. I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. And indeed, you know, I mean, I think we can learn from this video things that can be done now. For the police to show up in numbers visibly makes them look like what they are, a bunch of bullies, a kind of Gestapo-like of effort, where they're in essence enforcing, however reluctantly, however much under orders, however much because my superior sent me, whatever it was, they're still doing it. They haven't stopped doing it, and the city is paying to do it. So it pays to have that happen in a visible place. Now, this, what happened with the sitting ban protest, as you'll see tonight when you see this video, people began to sit down, and they just sat down on the sidewalk. They didn't block the sidewalk. They sat on the sidewalk, and the police started, you know, telling them to move, and they were very nice. Here's your citation. Okay, if you don't sign the citation, and if you don't leave now, we'll have to arrest you. And they started arresting people, and they arrested 39 people, and 39 more sat down.
Beautiful.
It was beautiful, and they stopped, and the police were standing there, and then they formed a triangle. They were guarding this open space. It wasn't quite clear why. Just to indicate that they had some land, they had some property. They were proving we couldn't go into a certain area, similar to perhaps what the motivation was behind the attack on your tent today.
Yeah, I did notice them kind of corralling us in there. They had two coming up from this side and four coming up from this way.
Right, I mean, that might have been just to look at both sides. But the idea that the city staff would get upset that you guys set up a tent, which is it's a big tent, and then admittedly there were a couple of sleeping bags inside it, so there could have been an incredible argument that you did so with the intention to remain overnight. But it was clearly, you know, a neat tent.
I thought the overnight, we made that point.
What's that?
I thought we made the point we're going to be over there there overnight.
Right.
We're going to be there until they rebuild.
Right. But I mean, and that's true. But we've often made distinctions between the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and the camping ban. Those are three parts of the same law.
Right.
The sleeping ban is you can't fall asleep at night and during the nighttime. The blanket ban is you can't cover up with blankets. And the camping ban is you can't set up a tent at any time with the intention of remaining overnight. Now, you obviously need to be able to protect yourself against the elements.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
But the courts have found locally that while there is a necessity to sleep, there is not necessarily a necessity to camp. That was a distinction made by Junk Justice Joseph, as we call him, a commissioner who tried the Camp Paradise originally 10, and eventually began the Camp Paradise 4 back in 2001. And he refused to accept the necessity defense that actually just won in court in the case of Craig Canada last month. And that's a defense that says if you need to sleep, therefore you're violating the law, but you have to do so to avoid a greater evil, which is serious injury to yourself.
Exactly. Injury, collapsing from fatigue while you're walking down the middle of the
going
road.
Going bananas and attacking three people, or having to take methadrine every night to stay awake, you know, things of that sort. So, but the thing that I noticed was this idea that who called the police that said that they don't want a tent on City Hall, even though it's a First Amendment exercise, as well as being a potential campsite. It's a way of saying, here's a big visible display of a tent. We're showing the community what needs to happen and what we need, and it's a First Amendment activity. It's a symbolic protest. Somebody at City Hall said, this is our City Hall. We don't want that here. We have a right to work here and make money here, but not to let the public exercise its First Amendment rights here. Somebody made that choice. Now, maybe it was a city council member. Maybe it was the city manager. Or maybe it was some pipsqueak person in a department somewhere that just decided they didn't like it, because anybody can call the cops and say, I am seeing a crime. I want to make an arrest. And it is a crime to set up a tent in Santa Cruz. It's actually not a crime to set up a tent in the county. It's a crime to set up a tent on public property.
No, I asked a police officer about that, and it is a county crime, too, except in a prescribed campground area.
Well, he's wrong. It's legal to set up a tent. You can even set up a tent in your backyard in Santa Cruz if it's in a backyard which can't be visible from the street. That's an exception to the camping ban. If you look at it, you'll find
that. Can't be visible from the street.
Right.
All right, well, then why don't we pull your listeners here and have them start renting out their backyard to the homeless?
If you rent it out, that's another matter. Then you might run into zoning problems. But we actually had, I think, Becky Johnson, who is a longtime homeless activist, let a succession of people sleep in her backyard, and a number of people do. In fact, one council member proposed this as a solution. Of course, it's not a solution because it's not a legal place really for people to go unless it's private charity.
No, it's like putting a patch on a sinking life raft. You hope it's going
to
hold.
Well, a person coming into town and needs to go to sleep cannot be guaranteed that they're going to be able to meet up with somebody who's nice enough to let them camp in the backyard. And that assumes you have camping equipment. That assumes all kinds of things.
That assumes a lot.
I guess you can lay down a sleeping bag in the backyard. But, I mean, even lawyers who allow people to sleep behind their offices are being... You know, people are being ticketed downtown for that, and you see around the library this disgusting defoliation of the library.
Oh,
all
my
the
word.
Shrubbery.
Oh, they did a wonderful trick for us.
Is being removed.
No, they did a wonderful trick for us. They brought in a dump truck full of manure and started dumping manure out there. So now we're smelling the lovely aroma of manure.
Right. Well, it could have been that was already part of the plan to replant the area around the library. But I note that a lot of this, I called Parks and Rec yesterday to find out who's behind this new remove all the brush from the library, where a number of homeless people usually were sleeping at night. Not that the police couldn't find them, but they were a little more, made them a little more discreet. They were kind of out of sight.
I've heard a few times from a few different officers, out of sight, out of mind. If I don't see you, I can't give you a ticket. But,
right.
That doesn't stop them on a bad night from going out, you know, and having
right.
A
but and now, it's going to be even more difficult because the library has been, you know,
defoliated,
and of course the areas along the river where people were sleeping are now forbidden zones to go into.
Yes, they are. They're saying that it is a wildlife sanctum, or they're trying to reestablish wildlife.
They claim they're trying to replant the area, but I've heard certain environmentalists suggest this isn't really happening. That it's more an attempt to drive out the campers. As they always do. They always have these big plans to get rid of the campers as though it were some sort of, you know, some military expedition. These were the Viet Cong. These are the Iraqi insurgents. This is the U.S. Al-Qaeda. You know, it's treating a portion of one's family as the enemy.
It's exactly what's happening.
You know, and it's really, it's actually fascist theory. Fascist theory requires that you have a foe to mobilize the community against. An outsider, a menace, a stranger to... scapegoat.
I mean,
it has to be the Jew or the communist or the socialist,
or the bum.
You know, and you know, there are people who say, well, bums are bums, man. You know, man, are you trying to say something here?
No.
I thought you might want to say something.
Bums are bums, but irregardless, that bum could be your father. That bum could be your brother.
No, it's interesting. I mean, they're
child.
We have an officer on the police force, Jim Howes, who Emily Riley. Rodkin threatened to have me thrown out of city council because I demanded to be able to make public comment on the fact that the city council was giving him a special award when Howes is notoriously anti-homeless and has taken all kind, he's taken various political actions against the homeless on behalf of the police department. I mean, he's kind of grotesque.
How does he do it on behalf of the police department?
Well, he went from door to door soliciting people to set up no parking zones at late at night along Almar Avenue back in 1999. You know, he...
I can't understand the mindset against a homeless person, regardless if they're doing drugs, if they're drinking, if they're sober, if they're clean. It doesn't matter.
Well, remember,
it's
that the
just a human being.
The police department initiated the sleeping ban. That law came out of the police in 1978, way back and many years ago. And if you talk to the police, they gave it. They also, were big supporters of the parking garage paranoia law. The law says you can't go into a parking garage unless you have a vehicle there. Although it used to be fine, and there, the no crime stats showed a great crime problem in the garages, it was just being done to facilitate the city employees. You are on Free Radio. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I can't hardly hear you, Robert.
Okay, what about now?
Okay, that's better.
All right.
I agree with you.
Who's calling in?
Huh?
Who's calling in?
What's
your name?
Mars.
Go ahead.
Well, you know me.
I do know you.
You know, the only thing I can say for Officer Jim Howes, I mean, I don't really know him that well, actually. I met him last September. The only thing that I can say for that man is I had a domestic violence problem last September, and, you know, I called the cops at, like, 2:30 in the morning, and he actually came to my rescue. And I am grateful for that.
That's good.
That's
good. Remember, though, that Officer Howes is the man who refused to come to meet with homeless groups.
Oh, yeah. I know that. In fact, I was a little nervous before he got here that night. I was, like, sitting on my doorstep all shaking and everything. And, because I didn't know how he was going to react to me. But I was shocked. I mean, he actually came up and was really compassionate.
Well, the point I was making on... What should I call you, Mars?
Yeah.
The point I was making, Mars, is that Officer Howes has a brother, Ed Howes, who is homeless.
Oh my God!
You know, and he used to come, and Ed would come to Huff meetings, and the very laws that Howes was enforcing was against his brother, and he apparently didn't think much of his brother, according to what his brother said, and there was this division in the family, and so. You know, I mean, you know, it's not an idea of Peyton Place. It's an idea.
Yeah.
The point here is, what is the point? The point had something to do with the fact that the police department is behind a lot of anti-homeless stuff. And they don't do it because they're evil people. They do it because they think it helps them to have tools that they can use to investigate crime. So it's much easier if you come into a homeless camp to say, oh, you're sleeping. Okay, that's a crime. I can search everybody here because I can arrest you for that. And since you're being arrested, I can search the property. And then maybe I can find evidence of this other rape that happened, 3 months before and two blocks away or something.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so the police are looking for tools. They don't much like the Constitution either for that reason in terms of the constitutional restraints, some of them, because they feel that, some police feel that it blocks their ability to get at the truth and to get the criminals off the streets.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you hear this from right-wing Republicans a lot. So there is this desire out of a good motivation to protect the health and safety of the community to eliminate the rights of certain classes of people as you go and to say, well, we'll protect them because we're good people. But the truth is that you can't really rely on any particular officer being a good person.
I know.
Or a whole structure of, it's even worse than that. I would say the institution of the police department corrupts those inside it because they follow orders. They become very elite and insulated from the community. And, they reach a position where you can't really have, it's not really a community policing anymore. It is, the community is paying for the police, but the police is a special interest group that has powers in the community that the community doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And they're armed with lethal force.
I know. They scare me. And, it's funny that you should mention the Constitution because, becoming a police officer is like joining the military. When you join the military, you know, they put us all in this room and, you know, we swear to take this oath to uphold the Constitution. And, you know, when I first got to Santa Cruz, you know, I was homeless for about 9-10 months. And I remember this one morning, I was sleeping inside of a cardboard box. And I got really shooken up, and then I got woken up like 3 mornings later by Steve Clark. He likes to walk up and like lightly be kicking people in the stomach. I woke up with Officer Clark lightly kicking me in the stomach, you know, and it's just sickening, you know. They're supposed to swear to uphold the Constitution and treat people with dignity and with rights, not just throw on, you know, become some fascist asshole with a uniform and a badge.
Mars, let me ask you, what year did now Lieutenant Clark do this?
Oh, it was in the late 80s, like probably, because I got up here shortly after I got out of the military. Let's see, that was from 85 to 86, so it had to have been like late 87, sometime maybe in 1988.
You know, there's something in the library, that if people are interested, I've actually recommended it to Amanda, called the Street Shit Sheet. And if you read the Street Shit Sheet, you'll find Clark became quite a famous figure. We called him the Kicker because he would kick people awake.
Yeah, that's what he does.
No,
he comes up and,
he's a police officer.
One night I was sleeping at the Little Red Church, and there was a domestic violence issue, and I got woken up because this guy is beating up his girlfriend, and she's going, help, help. So I come over there. I fucking basically stomped her boyfriend, fucking threw him down. You know, I didn't beat him up that bad. Actually, it could have been a lot worse. And then they turned around and called the cops on me, and guess who came up shining a flashlight in my face at 5 in the morning, kicking me in the stomach again.
So, but of course, this was 20 years ago, and I'd like to say times have changed, and perhaps to some extent they have, but, you know, we still have the same stupid law in effect.
Yeah, it's changed for the worse.
And we have more people than we ever did. Let me thank you, Mars, for calling in.
Okay.
And hope to see...
Amanda's going
to
meet me at 9:30 at Kinko's, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye. So, we are running into the last 8 minutes of the show, and I've been put on my honor to put on Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs at 8, even though Dennis is not around. I could try to steal some of his showtime. we have a caller. Could be Uncle Dennis calling in to chastise me. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, it's Madison.
Yes, Madison.
How's Stein last week?
Sorry?
Jim Howes resigned last week.
He retired at 50 with I think 90% benefits and this absurd payoff to the police department that Rotkin stage managed in 1999. Yeah, that's what happened with Howes, as far as I know. Yeah, he's no longer actively on the force. Of course, Lieutenant Habey isn't on the force either, and he still runs around, or he was a couple of years ago.
Well, he's going to be on the Santa
Cruz. He still runs around waking people up and banging on their vans. So go ahead.
But that group is run by the FBI also.
Well, thank you for that. I've got to go on you, Madison. So come on down.
And how's, I mean, we had, you know,
we'll
maybe
see you
we
at the protest. And I really got to roll. I mean, I got about 7 minutes left, and I don't want to hear about the FBI at this time particularly. It makes me paranoid, yes. So, but, you know, hey, I'll be coming back on the air again on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, perhaps even earlier with some flashbacks on Thomas Levitt's The Wake-Up Call, if that happens. And, you know, this is this whole sleep out at City Hall was unplanned. I mean, there was a one-night sleep out planned, and people decided they wanted to stay, And you made your own fucking mess. Now you regret it, don't you, you sleeper?
No, I don't.
Never.
You don't, really?
I do not regret it.
It's a burnout.
You should hear them off the air, folks. I want to leave. I've had enough of these fuckers. I can't take it anymore. Hell, what are these fucking bum skunks and pog? They can't take care of themselves. You know. And all this, of course, is really part of the whole process of trying to have a protest where you have a really wide variety of people with many different problems who share a basic problem. The need to sleep at night and the need to sleep legally and in some sort of community. I think it's amazing the way you guys have gotten together in a community with all the differences and all the problems and all the tensions that are there.
The thing that amazes me most about this whole activity, this whole protest, is the fact that we're still together. All these people having all their different personality problems and everything, and we're still together. We're still going, and we're going to keep going, you know, because it boils down to one simple thing. We need a place to sleep. We need to do it peacefully, quietly, without being bothered anymore. And, you know, maybe City Hall will actually hear us. If not, I'll find something new to do to them.
And watch out. We got John and Amanda Barnett in the studio. I'm Robert Norse, and I'm going to be down at City Hall again shortly when we will be showing the video sitting in Santa Cruz, probably around 8:45 starting. You might even see the new flyer, Homies for the Homeless Wants You, which Amanda is right in front of her. Any final words, Amanda, before we leave this den of radio equipment?
The only thing I need to say is please come down, and thank you for those who have come down. Join us, sleep, talk to us. Anything helps.
Yeah, and of course, tomorrow at noon, there's going to be this rally. The students are coming down to apparently do some, I don't know, maybe it'll be a naked parade downtown. The weather is right. I see you have
John wants a naked parade anyways.
I'm in.
He's in for the naked parade. It could be where we're trying to strip bare the hypocrisy of the city. And, you know, and we know women are allowed to go bare-breasted in Santa Cruz, but can we men show our peenies? That's the question.
Wait a minute. I don't know. I might wear a fig leaf.
Oh, you're going to wear a fig leaf? Jock strap, perhaps?
It's just a little bitty.
Yeah, well, hey, it's not the size. It's not how long you make it. It's how you make it long.
I like that.
See? All right. There we have a... And she should know, I'll tell you. So, all these questionable sexual references, actually not very questionable,
we're pretty direct.
Superficial sexual references here aside. We need new methods to bring home this struggle to, actually it's to the broader homeless community. I'm going to suggest that the real organizing needs to be done, and it's hard, with homeless people, provided you get enough rest somewhere, and you get enough people to spell you so you don't go crazy at each other's throats.
Short trip for me.
You know. Yeah. So, if you want to get in touch with folks by phone, you can call the Huff Line. Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is a voicemail some of the time, and I answer it part of the time, too. It's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And who knows, Homies for the Homeless is supposedly getting voicemails through the Community Action Board, but I haven't heard of any action on that score yet. Maybe there'll be some coming down the road. And I'm going to go down the road myself right now and check out the...
Trash Orchestra.
The Trash Orchestra and the set up the video. So come on down and see what happened 13 years ago when people got together to say no to the sitting ban law by the Rotkin Matthews Council. Kennedy was mayor at the time, actually, but Rotkin and Matthews are in there doing the same kind of shit they're doing now. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. It's been pretty much all about the protest at City Hall, the homies for the homeless hoopy-doo, but it's worth talking about, and I hope you'll continue to talk about it and continue to support it. They need blankets, they need sleeping bags, they need money for copies and flyers.
We need people who believe in it.
And people who believe in it to come down and do some sleeping and do some spelling them at the table so they can go off and have a bite to eat or... Take a, you know, lie down, look at the trees or whatever. Anyway, see you again 9:30, or I'll see you again in about an hour if you show up at the City Hall at 809 Center, right across from the main library. Thanks for being with me, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And I'll see you again you can hear me again on Sunday if you don't come down.
Big from the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dreg. From the cream to the dreg. It's every Thursday night from 8 to 11. From the cream to the dreg. From the cream to the dreg. Check it out. It's old-time music, new-time music. It's mostly fun, and it's just for you right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The free radio station.
Take this, brother. May it serve you well.
And she slammed the door in his drunken face. And now he stands outside, and all the neighbors start to gossip and drool. He cries, "Oh girl, you must be mad. What happened to the sweet love you and me had?" Against the door he leans and starts a scene, and his tears fall and burn a garden green. And so castles made of sand fall in the sea eventually. A little Indian brave who before he was 10 played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. And he built a dream that when he grew up he would be a fearless warrior Indian chief. Many moons passed and more the dream grew stronger, till tomorrow he would sing his first war song and fight his first battle. And something went wrong, surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melts into the sea eventually. There was a young girl whose heart was a bound, cause she was crippled for life and she couldn't speak a sound, and she wished and prayed she could stop living, so she decided to die. She drew a wheelchair to the edge of the shore, and to her legs she smiled, "You won't hurt me no more." But then a sight she never seen made her jump and say, "Look, a golden winged ship is passing my way." And it really didn't have to stop, it just kept on going. And so castles made of sand slips into the sea eventually.
Cancer is killing me. Hey, we got Billy Cox on bass. We got Mitch Mitchell on drums. Yeah, right. And we got yours truly on public saxophone. Keep moving on.
Secretary Ron Siegler told reporters the bill... ...after the breakdown of talks with Japan on voluntarily cutting back the amount of low-priced textiles it sends into this country. But the bill has already grown to include mandatory quotas on non-cotton textiles, shoes, and oil.
Yes, and for our third song, I'd like to do a thing called, let's see, what the hell do we call it? Oh, let me stand next to your fire.
Man!
want to let you know about something that needs to happen real soon. You got to save Free Radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org, or you could send mail to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061.